Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
There's no substitute for hard work. That's still true, even in payments. And that's what I like about payments. You know, you're right. All of us, we just kind of fell into it. And, you know, at our age, no one graduated from high school or college and go, wow, I want to go into payments. We all just kind of fell into this fintech arena. And I think now it's starting to get the recognition it deserves. And the multiples are starting to come up as well on the acquisition side. It's just a phenomenal industry to be part of because you're intersecting technology and finance. And it has so much to offer. And I think so much of how we'll kind of interact in the future will be based on the things that we're accomplishing within the fintech segment.
That was Chad Anselmo, the president of F1 Payments, and this is episode 41 of the Leaders in Payments podcast, and Chad is our special guest this week. I'm your host, Greg Myers, and hey, before we get started, if you happen to office in Houston, Austin, or North Texas, check out Fuse Workspace, where their mission is to help others do more. Check them out at fuseworkspace.com. Okay, back to the show. Chad grew up in Southern California, went to school in Utah, and today lives in Austin, Texas. F1 Payments is a leading merchant processing company that targets those verticals that are tougher to board, such as nutraceuticals or the health and beauty vertical. They work closely with banks to make sure these merchants are approved. F1 Payments processes payments for roughly 2,500 accounts and has grown from 8 employees 2 years ago to 35 employees today. Chad had some great thoughts on the future of payments, as well as some great advice for those just starting their careers in payments. We've got a great episode this week, so let's get started. Hi, Chad. Thank you for being here, and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
Thanks, Greg. So excited to be here.
Great. So let's just dive right in. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that.
Nice. Well, I'm a Southern California boy. Grew up and raised in Southern California. Spent some time at the University of Utah doing 2 undergrads and then a master's degree. And then after that, spent some time at Stanford also doing postgraduate studies. After that, I went into the entertainment industry in Southern California, because that's what we do down there, and then worked my way up to be one of the global controllers of Experian Credit Reporting Company, and then got tapped on the shoulder by Hip and Alan Kleinman and Hip Tran, to come be the CFO of Meritus Payments, and that's my journey into payments.
Great. We'll dive into that a little bit more later. Why don't you tell us about F1 Payments? What does F1 Payments do?
F1 Payments, well, what we do is we do merchant processing, but we tend to think that we have a little bit of expertise in the fraud and technology area. So we look at different verticals that are a little bit tougher to fill and to place at banks. And we work with banks to be able to provide the guidelines and the monitoring to be able to allow these merchant accounts to be able to be placed there.
Okay. And what kind of verticals are those?
Any kind of continuity vertical, and especially any continuity vertical that resides maybe within a nutra space or some of the healthcare space. Health and beauty is a big one that we service. We also do some biz dev work and other verticals that kind of in that little niche area.
Okay. And how big is the company?
Well, we just hired a 35th employee. So excited about that. And we process for about 2,500 accounts.
Okay. And how do you go to market? Do you have your own sales team or through partner channels or a little of both?
Mainly we go through partner channels. We have a reputation out there for being able to service these types of merchants, and we get all of our deals through those sales channels.
Okay. And what would you say differentiates your company from your competitors?
Well, I think it's really what we think about as our core business and who we service. We service the banks. And so we think of those as our true customer. And so because of that, we try to find ways that we can make the programs and the ways that we do business easier for the banks, whether it's either through reporting or through monetary means, and then allow that be able to create a process to be able to service the merchants that we do business with.
Okay. I always like to ask when the name of the company isn't necessarily obvious, but F1, where did that name come from?
Yeah, so that name came from my business partner, Shane Hibbler, had a fraternity called FO1 Ventures. And so we just borrowed it a little bit and shortened it to F1. You know, everyone kind of asks us, well, what does the F mean? And I think it's kind of open for interpretation. We've heard such things as F can be, one can be like speed or agility, like, you know, the F1 drivers, or it could be like, you know, on the help desk, you know, if you look at your keyboard, the F1 key is your help key. And we like to be helpful. Some of our employees have it mean family first, which means we have a very family first environment here at F1. And then those of religious persuasion definitely believe it means father first, which obviously is a faith derived.
Right, right. And where are you headquartered?
We're headquartered in Austin.
Okay, okay. And you do business nationwide?
We do. We love Austin. We moved here about a year and a half ago. We were previously in Houston for a season. And one day, you know, Shane kind of went around the room and said, you know, what does everyone think about Austin? I think it was his lifelong dream to be in Austin. And all of our employees at the time, we had 8, that was only 2 years ago, said, yeah, let's do this. They were all single. I had a family. And so I had to re-up and move my family again from just recently locating in Houston. And it was exciting. We love Austin. Austin is a great, thriving city, wonderful tech scene, beautiful landscape, you know, great undulation in the hills along with the rivers. And then also business-wise, it just is really a great place to do business.
Great. And you mentioned banks. So, you know, what type of banks do you typically work with? Are they, and are they, let make sure I understand, are they sort of a referral partner? So you work with them to get their clients on board? Is that sort of the model?
Actually, no. So a typical FI relationship does work that way. We don't work that way. So we typically don't go after banks' clients. We work with banks in the sense that they will allow us to be able to board the type of merchants that we're boarding, but we work with them to create the policies and procedures to be able to have these merchants be able to process.
Okay. Okay. Got you. And do you have sales agents or just like your sales force internally?
Yeah, interesting question. We originally had only 1099 sales agents submitting into us. We've done two things recently that has kind of changed the way we think about sales. First of all, we have limited the amount of agents that are able to submit this type of business to us. We call it the Elite 8 program. And it's a great program where agents can be their own owners and kind of entrepreneurs and submit business to us and think of all the way through the application intake, all the way through the boarding to the packaging, being able to work with our team to be able to make that process happen. And that we only take that from 8 different agents. So really you have to have commitments on the number of apps that you're willing to do, on your chargeback rates, on the type of merchants you're bringing on, the processing volume and stuff like that. We have about 6 to 8 different metrics that we monitor for our agents submitting to us.
Okay.
And then also, we had a recent inflection point where we built an internal sales team. Now, this internal sales team doesn't go after those same type of merchant verticals that we talked about before, but they go over to traditional merchant verticals that are traditionally associated with merchant processing. And we just hired a recent leader, Bo Tyndall. We were lucky enough to get him from TSYS to come over and head up that area.
Okay. So that's your typical, more like restaurants, retail, that kind of thing.
You got it.
Okay. Okay. So on this show, we're 40-some episodes in. We haven't really talked a whole lot about sort of the high-risk merchants, and I assume that's the right term to use for a lot of your business?
Yeah, high risk. It's an interesting nomer. We often get placed in that. I like to think of it as high margin.
Okay. Can you dive deeper into sort of maybe differentiate for the audience sort of the difference between a typical merchant and what might be considered high risk and why that's unique and why you guys feel like you do that well?
Yeah. So when we think about risk, the traditional risk pillars in a traditional merchant processing business kind of reside around 3 different things. One is long lead times. Another one is high ticket. And the third one is customization. So if you think like the perfect trifecta of this is like airline tickets, right? High ticket value, you're not going to travel for a while, and you can't go resell that airline ticket. Custom furniture would be another one. Custom suits, anything like that. Those have all 3 of those risk pillars. And so that's what sometimes considered high risk in the merchant industry. I think what we have is more brand risk than high risk from a financial standpoint. And because of that, this is why we work with banks to make sure that we have the programs and processes necessary to be able to make sure these merchants can keep on processing. Because longevity of a merchant is our primary importance, and to make sure that they're healthy.
Okay. And, you know, there's another sort of buzzword out there in the industry, and I did see it when I was looking at your website. So maybe we'll talk about it a little bit, the frictionless onboarding. So maybe talk about what that means for you guys.
Yeah. So especially in this vertical, we require a ton of bits of information from our merchants just to make sure that everything is copacetic and they are who they say they are. There's about 22 different pieces of information required, which is quite a bit different than a traditional merchant processor where, pardon if I say it, they can fog a mirror and they'll get a merchant account. You know, we have them look at obviously their customer care. We look at their fulfillment company. We look at their ingredient set. We look at the ongoing health of their current business. We look at their corporation docs and corporation docs. There's just a whole bunch of different things we look at. And because of that, there's a little bit of friction that goes along with that, requiring so many pieces of information. So we build technology to be able to allow us to be able to put all these bits of information into a portal and be able to have people submit through that portal. So it creates a little less friction on the front end from a traditional, what you like to call, high-risk processor.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the payments industry as a whole. So where do you see it heading, say, in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, it's got some great trajectory. I think this year, with the amount of cash that has been pulled out of the system and put onto merchant processing or credit card payments, has been an inflection year and accelerated any kind of stat that we ever thought would happen. I think I saw something the other day that as of last year, you know, it was about 50% cash, 50% alternative credit means, and now cash this year has dropped to 28%. If you think about that, it took us almost 30 years to get to that kind of percentage movement to get from cash to card. And mainly it was a movement away from checks to cards. And here we've done it all in 1 year. So the outlook for merchant processing is incredibly robust. In addition, you know, e-commerce sales has taken off amazing amounts. So not only are people obviously using a card more, but then they're also doing that through e-commerce merchants, which is a place where we play into. So we think, you know, being in the e-commerce world, taking credit cards is a fantastic place to be, especially for the next 5 to 10 years, as we all think about how we use our different payment techniques, as well as we purchase goods.
Do you see a trend, and I'm just sort of just thinking out loud a little bit, but do you see a trend where people are willing to buy higher ticket items without the normal sort of seeing it and touching it and feeling it? I'm thinking like furniture or things like that, that, you know, normally you go in a showroom and you see it and everything. But now with, you know, the environment we're in today, do you see that as a trend, or do you think that will happen or is happening?
It's interesting that you mentioned that one, because I think there's kind of an offshoot of that that I think is going to start to happen and is taking hold in the younger generation. You know, as older generation, we often think of you have to own it to be able to experience it. And so that's why, you know, you're talking about higher ticket items. How do you take the ownership experience as a transaction? But I think a lot of different people are looking at that and going, wow, I don't have to own that high ticket value item anymore. I could just have a continuity plan and be able to have it come and go as I need to see fit. So we see a ton of people now renting furniture, renting clothes. Obviously, you know, we all rent now our media. No one thinks about, well, I'm going to go out and buy a DVD or I'm going to go out and buy a CD. No, we all rent all of our media now. And I think that's only going to continue to happen, especially as you think about the millennials and especially their need to have ownership of things. Another example we give is cars. You know, it used to be, you know, 20 years ago, you would never think of renting your car or renting your car for just, you know, a trip or two. But now with Uber and Lyft and some of the other car companies where you could just go pick up a key and use a car for a couple hours, the assets that we used to think that you had to be able to purchase, now you can rent and do it on a continuity program. And I think that's an interesting development within payments as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Have you seen any impact positively or negatively from all of the consolidation and the big players in the industry?
Yeah, I think that's always destined to happen whenever you have consolidation inside of industry. They obviously start to refine their strategy and they try to figure out where they're really good at playing in, and then they'll jettison some of those business units that don't quite meet their objectives or their core competencies. And those are places where sometimes you could play and be able to get some lift. And we are seeing some of that. Some of the larger players are deciding whether or not they want to be in the ISO business or be able to support individual agents. And when those businesses make those kind of determinations, those groups, the ISOs and the agency, feel the pinch, and then obviously we get to service them.
Sure, makes sense. So we talked about the industry as a whole for the next couple of years. Do you care to bring out the crystal ball and think about payments in 10 years?
It'll be interesting. I don't know if I quite have that crystal ball. I think we'll continue to see the slide towards non-traditional payment methods, meaning outside of cash, right? So going non-cash, I think that'll continue to be a trend. Carrying cash in wallets might be okay for some transactions, but I think even microtransactions will start to be taken over by payments in general, just because of the ease of use. So I think the continuation of card acceptance only continues. Some of the outlying payment methods, if you're talking about Bitcoin or you're talking about Apple Pay or Google Pay, I think it depends on customer adoption and where people feel comfortable. I know that Apple Pay and Google Pay are kind of almost card acceptance anyway, because what you're doing is you're just taking a credit card and storing it inside a wallet. And that could become a play. I think we've had PayPal around now for, I'm just going to guess 20 years at least. And, we originally thought that wallets were going to take over everything. And we haven't quite seen the same adoption as we originally thought. So I think that it's really going to be card payments is really going to be with us for at least the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. Tell us about your journey from, your beginning of your career to your role today as the president of F1 Payments.
Yeah, so I think I brought it up to Hip and Allen bringing me on board at Meritus Payments. Well, or after that, we got acquired by Optimal Payments. And I thought for sure, being the CFO, that I was going to get my papers and they were going to just discharge me and let me go my way. But instead, through a unique situation and them hiring Brian Muscroff as their CFO, he believed in me and made me CFO over all the payment units, which was a wonderful opportunity. We did a number of acquisitions over the years, including, Merit Card and Skrill. And when Skrill transaction happened, that was interesting because then we decided to rebrand as Paysafe. And Paysafe, it's a great company, has great culture, really cares about its employees. And in that process of working for Meritus and Paysafe, obviously I learned a lot about the type of merchants that we service here at F1. And so it came time for us to kind of get sold again. And so at the time, Paysafe was mulling a sell to Blackstone and CVC. I kind of hard looked at my role. And luckily, we were doing a transaction at the same time of MCPS. And they had a wonderful CFO in Giovanni Diano. And so I relinquished my CFO hat to him and became SVP of strategy and business development. And then as soon as the transaction completed, I decided to go my way and join Shane, who had started F1 Payments about 6 months before I got there, and joined him. And then we just built the roadmap and then continued to execute.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about your role there and what you do. I mean, obviously, you have a founder in Shane, who's, I think, also the CEO, and then you have the title president. So maybe talk a little bit about your role and what you specifically do.
Yeah, so I run all the day-to-day efforts of F1 Payments. So Shane and I come up with a strategy that we want to see over the next 3 to 6 months to a year to 2 years, and then I go and execute on that. So the organization actually all reports up to me, the sales staff, the credit underwriting, the engineering staff, finance, obviously, legal, and risk all report up to me. And then I obviously help them be able to achieve their goals. I don't have to do much. I mean, to be honest, we have great employees who are very motivated to try to get their job done. So it's just tinkering here and there and making sure that we're following the metrics that we put in place. We're a very metrics-driven shop. And so we review our metrics every 2 weeks from every area and look at how we can improve them. In addition, we're a big technology shop. Almost half our employees are from the technology realm, engineers and such. And so we have a very robust pipeline that we're constantly reviewing to make sure that we can accomplish.
Sure. And you mentioned employees. So I think a natural question that I still like to ask is, how has COVID affected the employees? And do you guys work all remote? Anyone coming into the office? What's sort of the stance there?
Yeah, we believe our employees are our greatest asset. And they are. They're amazing. They recently voted us number one employer in the state of Texas and number nine in Austin because of math. I guess that's how it works. And then, because they're just such a great asset of ours, we were really concerned about how COVID would affect them. So we're trying to make sure that we have continual meetings where people get to have their voice and feel like they're part of the company. We still have our monthly meetings. We just now do them by Zoom. Monthly, we get together for some kind of social activity. At the first couple months, it was all on Zoom, and we'd, have cookies sent out to them from Tiff's Treats, which is a local company here. And then recently now, we started to have people come in voluntarily if they want to the office. So we've had about a half a dozen people back here in the office on any given day. And then we've had a couple events where we'll just say, hey, we're all going to meet up here. No pressure, nothing you have to do, but you're welcome to come out here and join in with us. And we're going to grab a bite to eat and then play some, board games or something like that. And the last one we had about half the company out to that event, even though it was purely voluntary.
That's awesome. So what's something that you're passionate about? Maybe give an example personally and professionally.
For me, I'm passionate about constant improvement. And so personally, I'm constantly reading self-help books. I like sports that require me to have to improve personally, like skiing and golf and archery. Those are typically, you know, one-on-one sports that you are the gauge on how well you're doing and you can push yourself. And then inside the company, we have that same kind of philosophy that we always want to become better. And we have a slogan called Free to Be You, which means you can do anything you want to. There's consequences to your actions, but obviously you have the power and are empowered to be able to make decisions for the better of the company. And people are constantly pushing the boundaries of how they can find ways to make our company more efficient and help our company be able to grow and mature.
Great. So who are some of your personal development experts that you like to read about or listen to?
Oh, man. Ray Dalio, I'm reading his book, Principles, right now. I think it's an excellent book. Probably the book I gift the most often is a book by Jeffrey Fox called How to Become CEO. I'll admit it was written about 25 to 30 years ago, so it's a little bit dated. We don't do expense reports by, you know, stapling our stuff to pieces of paper anymore. But other than that, I think the book is a good read for anyone who's kind of thinking about how to aspire up to the corporate ladder and how to use work as a way to be able to get there.
Gotcha. That's a good segue into the next question. You know, the payment space, as you well know from the different positions you've held, has become pretty much, you know, a hot, sexy industry to be in. People coming out of college are actually wanting to get into fintech and payments. I think you can actually take courses in fintech at a lot of universities now. I mean, when I started in it 15 years ago, I just sort of fell into the industry. But now, you know, people may have a desire to, like you were saying, get a career in payments and move up through the corporate ladder. What would your advice be to someone just coming out of college that wants to get in payments? What would you tell them to do and to focus on?
Oh man, there's no substitute for hard work. That's still true, even in payments. And that's what I like about payments. You know, you're right. All of us, we just kind of fell into it. And, you know, at our age, no one graduated from high school or college and go, wow, I want to go into payments. We all just kind of fell into this fintech arena. And I think now it's starting to get the recognition it deserves. And the multiples are starting to come up as well on the acquisition side. It's just a phenomenal industry to be part of because you're intersecting technology and finance. And it has so much to offer. And I think so much of how we'll kind of interact in the future will be based on the things that we're accomplishing within the fintech segment. And so I think it is getting the natural recognition it should deserve. And my wife and I, we sponsor a number of college programs and we're constantly asked, you know, how do we kind of get the career path that you had? And I say, you know, if you want to get into payments, it's great. Have a good understanding of obviously financial metrics and models, how money flows and where money goes, and then just get ready to work. Because even in payments, there's no substitute for hitting the streets and working hard and just putting your best effort forward at all times.
Sure, sure. So what's next for F1 Payments?
Well, we have a couple things that we're looking at. So we've kind of rounded that corner of standing the company up, getting the employees we needed, and being able to have the playbook. And now it's going out and getting the players, the next couple sets. So we've, up until this point, we've really focused on organic growth. And now we're looking at a couple different acquisitions for inorganic growth. And it's a really exciting time. You know, those employees that have been with us since the beginning, they've seen the transformation of our company from, you know, kind of, we had, what, 5-6 employees in the summer of 2018 to now the summer of 2020, we're up to 35. We'll continue to grow and we'll continue to get the best talent we possibly can in every single seat. But we're looking at the inorganic growth and some of the additional verticals we're going into to really drive us to the next level.
Okay, great. So we've covered a lot about you personally, your career, the company itself. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap up?
No, I really appreciate you having us on. We're excited to be here and to be, you know, considered one of the foremost technology companies. And your podcast obviously validates that. If anyone wants to do business with us, we're open for business. We're here in Texas. We love who we are and where we're at. And thanks again for everything you've done for us.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Chad, for being on the show. I know that your time is very valuable, so I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.